got 99 problems, but
digital music
ain't one. Hit me.
Digital music. It was supposed to make our lives easier. But now, a decade into the digital music age, most of us still have more questions than answers. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer, and today, as part of our series on super collectors, we'll take your questions about where to store your music and how to store it digitally, converting vinyl to MP3s, hard drive headaches, and more. Form and Control, that's the name of the new album from the phenomenal Handclap Band. The title suggests essential ingredients for a great dance track, and this New York-based group joins us to play live in our studio. All of that on Soundcheck after the news. Like Superman and Kryptonite, even a super collector can have a weakness, and for some, it comes in the form of a hard drive. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer, and today, our super collector series of impressive musical collections continues. Later on in the show, we'll meet a DJ who knows his entire vinyl collection by heart, or by feel. Plus, we'll hear a live performance from the psych soul group known as the Phenomenal Handclap Band. So far in our Super Collectors series this week, we've focused on the analog side of music collections, vinyl LPs, piano rolls, sheet music, and how to store them. Today, we fast forward to examine digital music collections and how to store them. There are some problems, from hard drive woes to conversion conundrums, and we want to help you find the answers to your digital music questions. You can call us at 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692. And joining us today to help out are two music and tech experts. Elliot Van Buskirk, founder and editor of Evolver.fm, is here in the studio. Welcome back, Elliot.
Thanks, John.
And out in San Francisco, music and technology writer Geeta Dayal joining us as well. Geeta, nice to talk to you again.
Nice to talk to you again.
Wasn't this supposed to make things easier, this whole digital music revolution? Wasn't that part of the thing? It was going to solve all of these problems? It seems like it's just made up a whole bunch of new ones.
Yeah, well, that's music's always been a very complicated thing, and recorded music for the entire 20th century. And so we're now in our latest complication.
And are you finding, Geeta, that you know, your readers are asking more and, you know, ever more complex and newer kinds of questions about music collections and storage conundrums and things like that?
Absolutely, absolutely. And not only that, but I feel like people are in tune with even more music than they ever were before. So I think a lot of people are just, in general, incredibly overwhelmed.
Well, let me read some questions, because they've already started coming in on our website. Let me read some questions to each of you. Elliot, I'm going to give you this one from Kate on our webpage. Kate writes, I'm a broke grad student living with my parents. They don't charge rent, but my father wants me to transfer music from CDs to his iPod. I want to know how I can take music that is currently on iPods, my laptop, and in the cloud, and put this data on an external hard drive, preferably in MP3 format. After that, I want to be able to listen to this music from my hard drive and also transfer it to my dad's iPod. You got something for Kate?
Sure, I do. I guess what makes it complicated is that her computer's, you were saying, the MacBook Air, not much space on there. So the first thing to do is take care of the hard drive question. You want to buy the hard drive before you start ripping CDs and transferring music, because otherwise it won't have anywhere to go, or you'll just have to do a very small amount of it at a time, and that's not what you want to do. You want to be efficient with something like this.
Step one is to buy the hard drive.
And
those are not so expensive, right?
No, hard drives are amazingly cheap per terabyte now. It's actually a great deal these days. Get the hard drive and then just take it one step at a time. For the CDs, I think, you know, she probably already knows what to do, which is to rip them with probably iTunes, if she's, you know, probably people are familiar with that. Go into the settings, ask your dad how much he cares about sound quality versus capacity. You probably want to tweak the The bit rate up to 192 is where I like it. Some people like it a little more. To my ear, that's where the declining returns start.
Okay, so when you talk about the bit rate, that's a setting in iTunes?
That's a setting in iTunes in the ripping, I believe, menu.
And the higher the number, the better sound quality you're going to get.
The higher the number, the better the sound, and the less music you can fit on the same amount of space. And that is a crucial question. So that's up to your dad's preference. In terms of getting music off of the iPod, Sanuti, other software, is capable of doing that. It's not totally kosher according to Apple. Neither are some other things that some people consider okay. And then the cloud is a little tricky. I don't know if you're transferring stuff from, you know, your Google Music Locker, that's easy, or iCloud. If you're talking about the cloud, like something like Spotify, you'd have to get into recording it, and that's a little more complicated than I can get into right now, but it's possible.
All right. So, but Kate, there you go. Step one, get the hard drive, move everything onto it. And that, I mean, right there in her question was the first half of her
answer.
Yeah,
she's halfway there.
All right. Gita, here's a question also from our website, from Meg, who writes, I recently spent a lot of time organizing my iTunes, deleting doubles, searching for track names, etc. Is there an easier way of doing this? Literally took me weeks.
Oh, no. Well, you know, iTunes to me has always been one of the failing points of Apple. Apple spends a lot of time designing beautiful hardware, but to me, iTunes was never fun to use. There was never anything fun about sorting your MP3s, about tagging things. You know, it makes me feel more like a reference librarian than somebody who wants to have fun listening to music. Mm-hmm. So I completely sympathize with her there. That said, one of the biggest problems I've noticed with people is that they do have lots of doubles in iTunes, and they do have lots of copies of the same MP3 on their hard drive, and so they end up not having that much space on their laptop, and they don't know why.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think one thing that you can do where you don't even need special software is, even in iTunes, you can check for duplicates.
Really?
But that's, yeah, it's in the settings in iTunes, in the more recent versions of iTunes. You can just go and it'll at least identify the duplicates. It won't immediately delete them. One of the things you have to be careful about, and I listen to a lot of jazz, is that iTunes will identify a bunch of duplicates. But, for example, if you have Miles Davis, you know, doing a track, then that he might then do the same track with somebody else, and they have the same name, but it doesn't mean that they're necessarily duplicates.
Right,
You know, if Monk is doing one song and it's solo, but then Thelonious Monk is doing the same song
with his quintet,
with somebody else, then it's still a different track. So one of the ways that a lot of the software works is it goes through and sorts through your MP3s, and it looks for tracks that are exactly the same time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that they're both 5 minutes and 3 seconds long, and then it thinks, okay, these are probably the same track. They have the same name, and they're exactly the same length. Another way you can kind of find really big files on your Mac is just going through the Finder, and you can go through Finder and find the biggest files on your computer. I mean, I just found 20 gigs that I could delete yesterday on my computer.
Of music files?
Yeah, music and video files.
All right.
Yeah, you know, in Finder, if you create a smart folder and then you put the settings for the smart folder to choose the biggest files, so I just say, find everything on my computer that's bigger than 100 megabytes, which is, like, pretty big.
Mm-hmm.
And then it'll find, you know, all these big movies that I forgot that I watched.
Right. So for
it'll
people
find
who
all these really big podcasts that I forgot I downloaded.
All of which is gumming up the works there and slowing up your machine and all
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
All right. So a number of things you can do to kind of manage when you're working in iTunes. Elliot, is iTunes, I mean, everybody uses it.
It's true.
But should they?
It's arguable that they shouldn't. But the thing is, so many of us use Apple devices. And if you use Apple devices, you're in iTunes for better or for worse.
All right. Soundcheck listeners, you don't have to be a super collector. Just have a collection. If you have a collection of digital music and have a question, a problem, Elliot and Gita are here to help. Our number is 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692. A caller, Joseph here in New York, asks, what's the state of the art for transferring vinyl to digital now and the best playback fidelity? Gita, you got a...
Well, I'd actually hand this to Elliot. I don't know. I've done some vinyl to digital transfer, but, you know, this brings me to another point. I actually prefer having the vinyl. I mean, I still have hundreds and hundreds of vinyl records. So, to me, I don't want my entire collection to be digital. So I have, you know, hundreds of vinyl records, hundreds of CDs, or thousands, rather.
But, you know...
That's
a whole nother issue. Now you've got two storage issues. You got the analog and the digital deal with. But let's just deal with the digital one. So,
okay.
Elliot, the question was state of the art for transferring vinyl to digital.
And you picked the right phrase there. Once I heard state of the art, it's clear that this is somebody who probably already has a decent turntable and probably a preamp as well. They do sell turntables that have USB outputs that are designed for this. Probably what he has is already better. So. That takes you almost all the way onto your computer. You've got a line level signal. You've been through your phono preamp. I won't even go into that, but you do need a phono preamp. You can't just plug a regular record player into the input on your computer. The one step that he's probably missing is a USB audio device that does the analog to digital transfer outside of the computer. Computers are incredibly noisy, especially laptops. If you wear nice headphones and plug into your laptop, you can like hear the sound of yourself hitting the return button. Mm. I mean, like electronically.
Wow.
You know, it's there. And so that if you're talking state of the art, you want to avoid that. And so
you want the signal already converted to digital when it's going into the laptop.
Exactly. And there are things that are so cheap that do this. There's the Griffin iMic is usually my go-to one. They're so cheap. It's just this little USB dongle, which is a great word.
Is that a word?
It's a word, yeah. And it sort of sits off of your computer and just handles that analog to digital conversion. Now you're on your laptop, and it's your choice of what software you want. It's all going to sound the same. There's no difference. It's all just writing down digital information. So I recommend Audacity, which is free, open source, incredibly stable, runs on all platforms. I assume you don't want to get into any processing like cleaning up hiss and stuff, and you can research that. There's software for that. But in terms of a clean transfer, the most important thing is just that signal. You know, you want to do the USB audio thing.
And what do you get from all that? Well, here's an example. A digitized track from the vinyl Beatles 1973 so-called Blue Album, collection of their later hits, and A Day in the Life.
I read the news today, oh boy, about a lucky man who made the grade. And though the news was rather sad, well, I just had to laugh. I saw the photograph. He blew his mind out in a car. He didn't notice that the lights had changed. A crowd of people stood and stared.
So that is the Beatles from their the 1973 compilation of some of their later hits, the so-called Blue Album, A Day in the Life, and that is digitized from the vinyl. So if you're listening carefully, you can sort of hear the needle in the groove, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, you hear the surface noise, but that, for some people, Elliot, that's part of the charm, I guess.
Indeed it is.
And Gita was talking about wanting to keep hold of her vinyl, you know, not wanting to digitize everything. But still, there are lots of people who have storage questions, both analog and digital. And let's go to the phones. Joni's with us from Mayapak. Hi, Joni.
Hi.
What's your question?
My question is, I have a Droid Razor, but I have all my music on iTunes.
Hmm.
Well,
is that is there a problem?
I want to get the music from iTunes to the phone, but you can't download iTunes onto a Droid Razor right now.
It's true. So the music that you're talking about is not only in iTunes, it's also on your computer. So the thing to do is find out where it is in real actual computer directories. I think you can right click on the songs in iTunes and say show where this is. You could also try searching for song titles. So all your music's there. You can put it on your phone. You just need to find it. So once you've found it, you'll see folders of music probably within your iTunes directory, and you just basically drag and drop those onto your Droid. And it's probably, there's a music folder on there. I guess one thing I didn't mention is you need to connect the Droid with a wire, right? You need to get find that box that your phone came in. There's probably a USB cable in there. Connect it. You should see your phone appear. You should be able to drag and drop those files just right across. You can't use iTunes, though.
And the other thing to say is most phones, Droids included, I'm assuming, will not have the capacity. You can't take all of your music if you have a sizable collection.
You can't take all your
music.
You
have to pick and choose.
Exactly. And if, depending on your level of sophistication, there are Android apps that let you transfer songs specifically from iTunes via Wi-Fi, so you might research those a little bit.
All right. There are questions on the phone. There are questions on the line, and that means a trip into the control room. Joel Meyer with some of the online comments and questions.
John, there's an interesting comment from Bernie in New York City that ends with a whopper of a question. So Elliot and Gita, grab onto something stable. So Bernie writes, I've got a collection of about 1,700 CDs. About a year ago, I purchased a digital music server from a company called Olive. I sent them 1,000 CDs, which they ripped onto this 2-terabyte drive, which they then sent back to me along with the CDs. The total cost? About $2,500. But I can now control the unit from my computer, Android phone, and most Apple devices. I can also play music simultaneously in up to 10 rooms, and it also plays internet radio. So Bernie really loves this. Then, the question, do I have to keep all the original CDs, or can I sell them without going afoul of the digital copyright laws?
Wow. What do you think, Gita?
The thing that I actually advise these days, because 2-terabyte drives are so cheap, I mean, I just bought a 2-terabyte drive for about $100, is that a 2-terabyte drive is capable of holding several thousand CDs, not even as MP3s, but as FLAC or Apple lossless. Mm-hmm. And so I'm actually
To interrupt you just for a second, hold on. When you say FLAC or Apple lossless, these are the really super good sounding files. They're
absolutely
really big, much so you get a lot fewer of them onto the same space on the drive, right?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Well, I listen to a lot of jazz, classical music, a lot of really heavily layered electronic music where I really care about the audio quality. Mm-hmm. And I feel like these days, because hard drive space is so unbelievably cheap, that there's really almost no reason to compress so far, say, into 192 bitrate MP3. I will either do everything as FLAC, which is like incredibly high quality, or uh-huh, Apple lossless. It takes up more space, but if a hard drive is so cheap, who really cares?
But then Bernie's question is, Elliot, can he throw out or sell the CDs without running afoul of digital copyright laws?
Can't. I believe that Bernie is maybe the most concerned about copyright law digital music fan that I've ever come across. But, I'm not a lawyer. I always have to mention I'm not a lawyer. This does not constitute legal advice. But I think you're in the clear. I've never heard of any case of anybody having problems for doing what you're talking about doing. It's perfectly legal to sell a CD, a used CD. And so
is it perfectly legal to do that? I mean, I know everyone has done it for years and years.
Yeah. I remember Garth Brooks going on to a talk show and explaining how he thought that was the single worst thing affecting the music industry, that people selling CDs. And, that's neither here nor there. I guess, you know, technically you are keeping a copy of the music. So, you know, it's not maybe... I think that relative to what people are doing with digital music, you're very much in the clear.
Although Edward from New Jersey disagrees. He writes this: Bernie from NYC, you can't sell them legally, ethically, unless you're also going to delete the digital files. You could move the discs and liner notes to CD wallets and trash the jewel boxes to save on space. That's
true.
Purely a storage. But again, there is a larger legal question, which may not be our brief for this afternoon. This portion of our week-long Super Collectors series on Soundcheck, looking at storage issues, and today, specifically, your digital music storage issues. And Matt is with us on the phone from Westchester. Hi, Matt.
Sir, how are you?
I'm okay.
I have a couple questions about, I guess the way to put it would be the shelf life of CDs and all these, the flash drives, the USB drives, and even the solid state drives, how long do they actually last?
That's a really good question, Matt. Geeta, Elliot, do we know the answer to that yet?
I would really caution people against getting rid of their, like, huge collection of CDs that they've lovingly put together for years and years after transferring their collection to MP3s. I personally know many, many people who have really regretted it. They've transferred all of their music to digital, their hard drive fails, they've sold their CDs or they've gotten rid of them, and now they don't have anything. The other thing that happens, I think, is that people transfer their whole collection to MP3s, you know, and then a few years go along, and then they realize, well, I didn't really transfer the MP3s at a bit rate that's high enough to meet my standards anymore, but they don't have the CDs anymore, so they can't re-rip everything. So I would really say, I mean, unless you really need the money, keep the CDs just in case.
And in terms of the hard drives and all that kind of stuff, I can just tell you from our own, you know, our archives, our archivists are constantly ripping their hair out because in the 1990s, we started backing stuff up digitally and all these different digital media, DATs and CDs, you know, recordable CDs, they're all failing. They're all starting to fail.
Yeah, it's you really need anything digital, you need it in two places.
Which, you know, sort of gets back to an underlying subtext to many of the questions we're talking about today, which is people love their vinyl, you know, their analog. There are people who love old tapes, old 8-tracks and cassettes and vinyl, don't want to get rid of them. There's an app for that, as they like
that
to say.
There is, shockingly. You know, I've seen even – I have a younger guy working with me on Evolver, and he's the last person I expected to say is he turned in a story to me about how much he buys records. This is the only way he ever pays for music. I don't even know if he's ever bought a CD or an MP3, and now he's buying vinyl every month.
But tell me, show us this this app.
So I'll explain what I'm doing right now. I've got an iPad in front of me, and I'm about to drop a needle on a record, and we can see the picture of the record. I've chosen the record from a stack of virtual crates, and here we go.
So you can do virtual crate digging there on the iPod, or iPad, and then what happens? Now, so what is this?
This is an app called Vinyl Love from these guys in Malmo, Sweden, which apparently everybody makes apps in Malmo. I've come across so many of them.
Am I hearing surface noise here?
You are. They add a little bit of crackling. I think they do it more towards the beginning of the track. And it's nice. You know, this thing, it looks like a record player. I can go like that and scratch, although that's not the point. I think they're just having a little fun. But the point is to sort of get that vinyl experience where you're being very intentional about what you're going to play, and then you're seeing it playing, you're moving the needle, deciding, well, which track do I want to play? And it replicates a lot of what people love about vinyl, thus Vinyl Love, And the makers of it said they envision people using this at a dinner party, sort of let the guests comb through your virtual crates and pull out what they want to play.
And so it brings some of the physicality back to music, even when it's in the digital realm.
Even, I mean, what can't an app do? Anyway.
So Vinyl Love is the name of the app. Elliot Van Buskirk is the founder and editor of Evolver.fm. He's been with us here in the studio. Geeta Dayal, music and technology journalist, on the line with us from San Francisco, answering your calls and comments about digital music storage. And Geeta, Elliot, thank you both for being with us once again on Soundcheck.
Thank you so much.
And tomorrow we'll be wrapping up our Super Collectors series by speaking with the record producer Don Fleming about the Alan Lomax Collection, which recently released a sampler of digitized field recordings that Alan Lomax made on his various treks through the American South and indeed the rest of the world. Take a listen to one of those recently released digitized tracks. This is Mississippi Fred McDowell with Sidney Carter and Rose Hempel singing When the Train Comes Along. More from the Alan Lomax Collection tomorrow on our final edition of our Super Collectors series. Up next, we hear from another super collector, a Chicago-based DJ who, by necessity, knows his record collection by touch. And later, a live performance from the New York Psych Soul act, the Phenomenal Handclap Band. This is Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer, and in the background you're hearing a dance mix produced by the Chicago-based DJ Kevin Cosgrove. These days, many club and party DJs play their music from laptops or iPads and other devices, but Kevin still spins it old school, and that means keeping a huge vinyl record collection and lugging parts of it from gig to gig. Unlike some other DJs, Kevin Cosgrove is legally blind. We heard about Kevin when a friend of his nominated him for our series on Super Collectors, and we've called him in Chicago to find out more about his collection. Hi, Kevin.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. How long have you been DJing?
Well, I've been really serious about DJing and vinyl in particular for about 5 years now, but, you know, I've been buying music for, you know, going back to, like, junior high school, setting aside lunch money to try to, you know.
Now, you know, as someone who is legally blind, was it harder for you to, I mean, I know you have nothing to compare it to, but, you know, was it, were there special challenges for you to learn how to DJ?
Well, I mean, aside from being legally blind, I also kind of went in it alone initially, so I had to figure it out as I went along, but
yeah.
You know, really, it's if you're using vinyl for DJing, it's a very touch-oriented process, and that's what's what I love about vinyl, and what a lot of, you know, sighted DJs love about vinyl too, is, you know, you're going through records that all have different feels and textures. You're putting it on. You're queuing it up with your hands. You know, manually putting it on the spot you want, and then, you know, you're doing the pitch control. You know, it's all just touch. So there's not necessarily a need for having perfect vision.
It's funny that, you know, you're talking about the tactile sensation of DJing. And Elliot Van Buskirk was just here with his iPad app, you know, a digital app that attempts to kind of bring back a little bit of that tactile, that physical sensibility.
Yeah. Those things are a little silly to me. Like, there's virtual DJ things, and it's like, why invent that when there's already something that works just fine, you know, but whatever.
Now, so one of the other super collectors earlier this week, Kevin, that we spoke to, was a guy who collected over 500 copies. Actually, when we spoke to him, it was just over 500 copies of the Beatles' White Album. He informed us that he actually now has bought three more since we spoke to him like a day or two ago. But so the question is, you know, for him, each of those things was not a musical artifact as much as, you know, a personal one. Each cover was smudged in a different way, was dog-eared, torn. They were all different. Is that how you tell your LPs apart?
Well, there is that. There's wear and tear specific to my own records, and I do have that. But in addition to that, there's also different textures from record to record. You know, like there's double albums. There's ones with a glossy sleeve. There's, you know, a standard paper sleeve. There's little rougher cardboard. And then there's some, like, more deluxe packaging that have, you know, lots of more intricate designs. You know, like, I'm sure you remember Public Image Limited, they had that metal box.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's also something I got a little recently by a band called Stay Positive, and it comes in, like, basically a rubber yoga mat, you know, and it's got raised embossed design on it. So that one's always especially easy to pull up, you know. But, yeah, so there's different designs and textures, like, you know, even without my own wear and tear. But, you know, I certainly can tell if something's ripped in a specific way or something like that, yeah.
We're speaking with Kevin Cosgrove. He has a collection of over 2,000 records, also 1,000 CDs. He is a DJ. He's legally blind. And, you know, the sense of touch, the feel of these different recordings, obviously, as he's telling us, critical to him doing his job. And you can find a link to Kevin's dance mixes on our Soundcheck webpage, wnyc.org/soundcheck. Let's hear a little bit of this this group, Stay Positive, electronic music collective, with a song called Fever. And Kevin Cosgrove, thank you so much for being with us on Soundcheck today.
Oh, thank you very much.
Still to come, put your hands together, get your dancing shoes on, because New York's phenomenal handclap band joins us for a live performance. Plus, there are still a few tickets left for our upcoming live show in the Green Space on Monday, February 27th. We'll be joined by hip-hop MC Yasiin Bey, the former Mos Def and one of the founders of what came to be known as underground hip-hop. Also, the Robert Glasper Experiment and R&B artist Bilal performing together. That's coming up on Monday, the 27th at 2 p.m. in the Green Space. Tickets going fast. Get them while they're still there at wnyc.org/soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Turns out we're not quite finished with super collectors for the day. In the studio with me now is a group that knows a thing or two about vinyl archives, the Phenomenal Handclap Band. In a moment, we'll find out how their collective musical obsessions help create the band sound. But first, let's hear that band sound. This is the Phenomenal Handclap Band with a song called Give, live on Soundcheck.
You don't have to get before you can give.
That is the Phenomenal Handclap Band live on Soundcheck in a song called Give. Phenomenal Handclap Band's new album is called Form and Control. It's out now. And the band includes Daniel Colias, who plays the keyboard. Laura Marin is the vocalist. Patrick Wood behind the drum kit. Morgan Phelan and Kenan Gunduz playing guitars. Emily Panic playing the bass. Daniel, to you and the rest of the band, welcome to Soundcheck.
Thanks. Thanks for having us.
You guys are doing a record release show tonight at the club New Blue here in New York.
That's right.
But you're also doing a DJ set afterwards.
Yeah, we're going to DJ afterwards, right.
So if you're a DJ, you have to have a collection.
That's true.
How extensive a collection are we talking about here?
I would say moderately extensive.
And are you given to crate digging and all that kind of stuff? You
know? Yeah, but I just call it record shopping.
Any, like, prize records that are stuck away in a box somewhere in the apartment?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's not necessarily hidden or anything, but there's this Joe Harriott record that I like an awful lot that I don't see very often. He's this jazz saxophone player, and he teamed up with these, like, Eastern musicians. It's like John Mayer and Joe Harriott, and they have this track on there called Raga Mega that I really like a lot.
And how's that go over on the dance floor when you're
never
working?
Never do I play it on the dance floor. It's like at the end of the night or the very beginning of the night.
Now, does your work, you know, as a DJ and as a, you have to be a collector before you can even be a DJ.
Yeah, I would say so.
Does that affect how you write songs for the band?
Yeah, sometimes. I think that there's like a lot of there's a lot of material to draw from, but I think that when I get really in the mode of writing, I don't really listen to music as much. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like I have a period where I like listen to music a whole bunch and then don't really at all. And then go through a period of where I'm just like writing and kind of like, you know, it's like you kind of turn off that part of the brain.
So where do you store all that stuff when you're in that non-listening, non-DJing mode?
I mean, it just stays in the same room. It's got like, you know, it's got like record shelves.
Okay.
Pretty much just stays there.
All right. Laura, yes. when the band did its first album, you guys were sort of put in the kind of disco revival camp. Seems like this new record might actually be looking at what came after, you know, that so-called dance-oriented rock that led into New Wave. Is there a different, you know, difference of approach this time around?
Well, I think that's a good question because when people ask us, you know, what kind of music you guys play, and it's really hard to describe because I think is we call it like dance rock, psychedelic dance rock. I guess that would be the best answer.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's a lot of dance in this album for sure, but also there's other songs like, you know, All Cliché or The Attempt that I think.
Yeah, or Written Word.
Yeah, or like, Written Word.
Yeah, we're all big fans of Turkish music, too. And I think
that
was kind of like our homage, I guess, on this record, if there was one.
Wow. In terms of, you know, world music, I mean, rock has long had a love affair with Indian music. Haven't heard too much in the way of Turkish stuff. Little bit here and there in Led Zeppelin, but...
Lately, I think that there's been kind of like a revival or people discovering a lot of Turkish music.
But,
I mean, maybe it's just the circles I travel in.
Now, the record's called Form and Control. You know?
Right, it is.
Seems like a pretty rigorous approach to writing.
I didn't really consider that. Everything else, like the artwork is all pastoral and nice. But I guess there is something kind of like Germanic about it. Can I say that on the radio?
You just did. Okay. So Form and Control, just a nice title, or were you really kind of like wrestling with this stuff?
Yeah, I would say wrestling. I mean, there was the song that I had been writing, and then to make a note of it, when I finally got the form of it together, I wrote Form, and then I realized that I had a bunch of notes that said Form. That was the form of this particular song, but this is the one that I wanted to bring over to England with us when we went to record, so... I put In Control after it, and I was like, okay, that's a title. And then it just kind of rose to the top of all, you know, like that was what we were going to call the album, you know?
We're speaking with and listening to live music from the phenomenal Handclap Band. Their album is called Form and Control. You want to do the right one for us?
Sure.
It's another live performance here in the Soundcheck studio.
To the skin like the sins.
Some live dance rock in our soundcheck studio from Phenomenal Handclap Band. The song is called The Right One. It appears on their new album called Form and Control. And actually, Laura, the full line is Let the Right One In, which is also the name of a Scandinavian vampire movie that came out couple of years ago. Any connection, or is that just a coincidence?
It's a coincidence.
It's a coincidence, Daniel. I mean, it wouldn't have surprised me if there had been a connection. You mentioned before going to England to record the record, and it seems like in Europe, maybe there's a different audience for this sort of thing, where maybe it's... Is it a little more mainstream at this point?
What specifically?
The idea of the kind of disco revival, the dance rock thing. I mean, do you find it that there's a different level of exposure for this music in Europe than there is here in the States?
I mean, there's a lot more festivals in Europe, for sure. But I kind of feel like when we go and play out there, we're considered as having like a very New York sound, which is interesting to us because we don't really know other bands that play like this out here. But I mean, there are bands that are doing that more here, I think, than out there.
So do you feel like there is a, you know, that you guys are sort of outliers, or do you feel like there is a community of like-minded people here?
Yes.
Both of the above, all of the above.
Yeah.
I mean, what do you guys think of someone like, you know, the folks at Daptone Records, you know, with the neo soul, the reviving old kind of soul? I mean, it's
I love
different
what they
style,
do.
But it, you know, seems like they might be simpatico with what you guys are doing.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. But I feel like their approach is a lot more. What is the word? I really, really love and respect what they do, and I'm friends with a lot of them. But I feel like that their sound is more based on like soul music as the genre.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that we ever really think of a genre that we're trying to play or write. It's just the music that, you know, it's kind of like how we hear music.
Well, the band is playing tonight, record release show at the club New Blue here in Manhattan with a DJ set to follow. The album's called Form and Control. You're hearing a bit of it in the background now. Phenomenal Handclap Band. Guys, thank you so much for coming in and playing
for
us today.
Thank you so much for having us.
And that's going to do it for Soundcheck today. By the way, in our first segment today, we were talking about digital music storage solutions. There are actually some interesting crowdsourced solutions on our comments page, so check that out at wnyc.org/soundcheck. On our next program tomorrow, archivist Don Fleming joins us to talk about history's ultimate super collector, the late folk historian Alan Lomax. Plus, we'll hear about Don's own massive collection of, get this, 8-track tapes. Also tomorrow, Noah and the Megaphone bring their swingin' sound for a live performance to the Soundcheck studio. Our technical director is Irene Trudell, the program produced by Katie Bishop and Greta Cohn. Our senior producer is Joel Meyer. We had help today from George Wellington and Gina Gildasis. I'm John Schaefer. This is Soundcheck.